Welcome to the Podcast Potables Network. You are listening to Process Potables, brought to you by the Andrew Boss team at Berkshire Hathaway. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a 5-star rating, and a review on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter and Untappd at Process Potables, and on Instagram at Podcast Potables Network. Check out our other featured shows on Twitter as well, Powerbombs and Potables, at Powerbombs PPN. Our friend Corey brings you the past week in professional wrestling television every Monday morning. Pucks and Potables at Pucks PPN, talking Flyers, talking hockey, talking beer. With Mike and Mason, they dropped a brand new episode Wednesday, talking about the return of the NHL, talking about the round robin games that the Flyers will play in, the best of five series for some of the other teams looking to qualify for the playoffs, and much, much more. And our movie podcast, Popcorn and Potables, can be found on Twitter at PopcornPPN. For news, blog posts, info on breweries we've worked with, and more, check out www.processpotables.com. Process Potables is on tap. Cheers, everybody. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 65 of Process Potables. This episode is titled Woj F-Bomb. With me, as always, is Steve at SWJones87 on Twitter. Steve, I know we both had kind of rough days, but, you know, we get to have a beer, we get to hang out, we get to talk a little basketball. There's a long way to go still in our country between COVID-19 and social justice issues, but you know, some strides being made, take small victories where we can get them. But as a tree, I thought, you know, let's talk a little bit of basketball. Why not, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I hate to keep being a Debbie Downer all day today, but on my way here, before, you know, even after we did our little rundown and outline here, they officially announced that there's going to be no fans at any games through February 2021. So we knew it was coming. But it just sucks hearing it. So,
well, yep. That also probably means there's some money coming back in our pockets as season ticket holders.
I was about to say, yeah.
Not the
all
worst
you season
thing,
ticket holders.
Not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
Not the best thing in the world. It's definitely for the best. Like, we've been on the topic of talking about how they probably shouldn't be playing anyway. I definitely don't think there should be fans in there anytime soon. So, if that is the case, then absolutely that is big news. But
listen, when we won the Super Bowl, that was months after our starting quarterback, who was having an MVP season, got injured, and we thought all hope was lost. So with this very strange year, Sixers winning a championship in Orlando with no fans present and no opportunity to have a parade, sounds about right.
Oh, whoa. We're talking about fans not being at games till February. Nobody said anything about the parade.
That's
Try
true.
And fucking stop me.
We'll have a parade.
I'll have a parade.
Yeah.
Hell, I'll just get drunk on the back of a flatbed trailer. I don't care.
It counts.
It's a parade.
Yep.
To me. So, some news that we do have as far as this episode is concerned, we will be joined later by longtime friend and has been on the pod before, Harrison Grimm, now of Liberty Ballers. Really happy for Harry to get that opportunity. He will join us later. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter at Harrison_Grimm. That's with two M's. So, G-R-I-M-M. And as we are known to do, our big deal here is we like to go to the breweries, talk to people at the brewery, talk to people that, you know, want to talk beer and ball, stuff like that. We will be live at Axe and Arrow Brewing, friends of ours. We've done an episode there before. We will be there on July 31st outside, social distancing being taken into consideration.
Within the confines of the rules, yep.
Yep, everybody will have masks where needed. Everybody will be at least 6 feet apart. They have tables, outside seating. It is right on Rowan Boulevard, if you're familiar with that area. So there's a giant courtyard with a ton of very spaced out seating, so there's plenty of room. And whether you want to drink or not, you can sit outside of the brewery and you are able to drink beer there. You can sit on the courtyard area, and you can't be served beer there, but you are more than welcome to sit, hang out, pets are welcome, things like that. So
bring your wife. She may get drunk and want to take pictures while she's in those streaming fountains.
There is a big fountain that, you know, girls may like for Instagram pictures, or guys, you know, that's your kind of thing.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
We're going to be talking all sports. We have special guests lined up. I have a special guest that is coming to talk some Union.
Mm.
I have a special guest that is coming to talk some Phillies, and we are working on everything else. So as of now, we're definitely going to have people there to talk. And, you know, they'll be talking a little bit of everything. Most people.
Five for five.
Right? Yeah, exactly. We've got the we've got the meets, we've got the beats as in beat reporters, and we've got much, much more. So very excited to get back to our shtick, our bread and butter, our hops and yeast. I don't know if
something
there's a
like
metaphor
that, yeah.
for that, but I tried. But before we get to any of that, and before we dive into this episode, we do have some news to bring you from around the NBA and whatnot. So here is this week's Quick Sips. So, based off the title of the episode, this isn't really breaking news, but we thought that it was definitely worth talking about because we know that, especially a lot of the people that probably fit into the demographic of people that listen to us, and I think me and Steve probably feel the same on this. Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN, and basically the best guy at breaking news in the NBA that there is, was suspended by ESPN for replying to a press release he received via email from a Republican senator from Missouri, to which he responded simply, quote, "fuck you."
Yeah, it's pretty pretty funny. I mean, it's really a bad look all around. There's really no winners here as far as this goes.
I'm sorry, Woj is a winner to me.
He is. Okay, I'll give you that. But it also, it's just weird not seeing Woj tweeting in the past 4 or 5 days now. So, and not to get too political here, but that letter, if you saw the press release that senator was going to release, I don't think he even did, was just really stupid pandering and Republican political BS. So
basically, it looks like, so it's, who is it, Josh Hawley? I guess I'm saying that right. I don't know. Was blasting the NBA for not supporting the U.S. military and law enforcement. I guess this is in regards to the names on the back of the jerseys.
Yeah,
being,
because they're only limited to Black Lives Matter related names and the movement. So
eat a dick, dude.
Yeah.
Eat a dick. That's my statement.
I just hate when politicians like that, they pretend as if, you know, the police and military never get any kind of support from anyone. Like, come on. Like, and it's just, you know, basically what he's doing, he's trying to devalue the Black Lives Matter movement because that's the one cause that gets the most criticism and everything.
And it's a platform he doesn't support.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is.
And I mean, hey, if you hate Chinese communists, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But it's just, he's really trying to belittle the movement by, you know, raising profiles of other ones that support his. So fuck that guy.
In more basketball-related news, Rajon Rondo fractured his right thumb and is out 6 to 8 weeks. So the Lakers, who already kind of had a primary ball handler issue, being that, you know, they're going to run LeBron on the ground at this stage of his career, Rondo was kind of the only other realistic alternative at this point, and now they won't have him for a significant period of time. Based on this timeline, he theoretically could return later in the playoffs, but even that timetable, I mean, when you come back, usually it's not all there, and especially, I'm pretty sure he's right-handed, your right thumb, I mean, dribbling, grip, everything. He's already not a great shooter, but, you know, he's a good passer, he's a playmaker. Like, if you have any kind of instability in your dominant hand, that can linger for much longer, and also it's going to be tough to, like, get back into, you know, basketball activities with that injury.
Yeah, I can't think of who would back up Rondo as far as a point guard's concerned. I guess maybe they have to go back to the past a little bit and sign that guy who was in their G League team that was like a math tutor or something. And you know, that was 2, maybe 3 years ago, and he got called up at the very end of the season and put up like 20 points or something like that in meaningless games. But
I'm sure Lakers fans are going to clamor for Caruso to do it. And
yeah, sure.
Have fun with that. Good luck. A story came out from ESPN that Rudy Gobert has been frustrated with Donovan Mitchell's ball dominance at times. Yet all ESPN shows have been talking about is should the Sixers split up and beat in Simmons?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Very weird.
Utah's a basketball team?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Their state sometimes.
This afternoon, Shams, since there is no Woj, tweeted that multiple tips have been placed to the NBA's anonymous hotline to report protocol violations on campus. On Monday, you probably heard that former Sixer and current Sacramento Kings center Rashawn Holmes crossed the Disney campus line to pick up delivery food and must quarantine for 10 days. So our buddy Ty Daubert texted me and said that Rashawn got Oubre'd because Kelly Oubre had tweeted that, hey, you could basically just go cross the picket line and get food. You know, they said, like, I think the drivers won't bring it in. Security will let you go out to get it, something like that. And then it sounds like that's what Rashawn Holmes did. And then Uber tweeted later, oh, guess I was wrong. Never mind.
No.
And what I said to Ty was basically, you know what? Like, Rashawn wasn't going to do anything here. The Kings aren't going to do anything here.
No.
This is probably the best use of his time is go get the team some better food. We're going to talk about the food in the bubble later, but...
With that said, I just want to know what he ordered, and I just want to know, like, was it worth it, dude? Because
that's my point. I think it's worth it regardless.
Yeah, listen,
I've
been to Orlando 4 times now, and, like, there's, you know, good food in Disney, but there's nothing where I'm like, oh, I'm dying, you know, have this. It's not like when you go to NOLA, there's certain food spots
right. That
you want, or you go out to the West Coast, there's In-N-Out Burger. I'm like,
yeah,
like,
Orlando's not the hotbed of cultural dining.
So it just sucks. What if he did that to... You know, he got takeout from, like, I don't know, like, somewhere, like...
Whatever you say, I'm still going to say it was worth it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you need
it. Like, if it was Taco Bell, like, okay, dude, I guess so. But if it's,
I was going to say not to give any free advertising away, but Taco Bell deserves it, so...
Oh, absolutely.
Fine. Well, not after... So this wasn't going to be part of Quick Sips, but I guess it's going to be part of it now. Taco Bell is reducing their menu by a staggering amount, getting rid of things like the Quesarito, the Beefy Fritos You're Burrito... I think they said all potato-based items.
Yes.
And the loaded grillers. I am devastated. I am upset. And this is all news I got after I had already decided this was a terrible day. So,
yeah, and
not helping.
I mean, the only thing from that list I'm really going to miss is a beefy Frito burrito.
Yeah,
but
that's
where,
number one.
But where it really hurts for me is that a lot of those items are like the one or two things my wife ever gets from Taco Bell, especially anything potato-based.
So now how do you get her to go?
Exactly. So now, dude, talk about being in a bubble.
Yeah. Ooh, tough scene.
Sheesh.
So... I'm guessing as you had started writing the rundown for this episode, we didn't have this news yet, but you know, you wrote that the Sixers, no one had opted out, everybody was going, and then the newly acquired Ryan Brokoff announced that he would not be currently joining the team. He put this out there that his wife tested positive for COVID-19, and they have a son, so obviously with her being diagnosed, I'm sure he needs to take care of his son while she is in quarantine, so absolutely understandable. I wasn't really too big on what his role would have been here anyway. I think it was really just bench depth. He wasn't a guy that I expected to actually get playing time unless something went wrong. But, you know, we wish the best to him and his wife and his son. So, you know, take care of your business and they'll take it from there. They had mentioned the other day that two players of the 372 or something that were tested had tested positive. I don't know that these are the two, but it has been confirmed that both Russell Westbrook of the Rockets and Harrison Barnes of the Kings did test positive for COVID-19. That is per Shams as well. And it had also been stated that James Harden and Russell Westbrook had not joined the Rockets in Houston yet. It is now said that it is believed that James Harden is going to wait for Russell Westbrook to end his quarantine and then travel with him to Orlando, which is very strange, being that, you know, those are basically the two guys that make that team. And you now have to go these next few days practicing and getting warmed up without your two best players.
So does that make our boy Roko the number one guy in Houston?
I mean, he was already the number two guy in my book. So, yeah, he's definitely number one.
He's like
one.
The number one guy who's a number three in the NBA but playing number five on that team. Strange times.
Something like that. I think your math sounds right to me. And that's all we have for this week's Quick Sips. So... everything else we want to talk about is going to be Sixers-based. We want to bring Harrison from Liberty Ballers on, obviously, to talk as much Sixers as we can. So before we get to that, we do have to take a quick break for a message from our sponsor, the Andrew Boss Team at Berkshire Hathaway.
Who's the next person you know who will be buying or selling a home? Have them contact the Andrew Boss Team at Berkshire Hathaway for the most trusted process when it comes to real estate in New Jersey. Call today, 856-904-5636. That's 856-904-5636. And mention Process Potables for exclusive savings.
All right, so joining us now from Liberty Ballers is my friend Harrison Grimm. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Harrison_Grimm. That's with two M's, G-R-I-M-M. Harry, what's going on, man? Haven't talked to you, you know, in person or anything in a while. Actually, it's funny what's been coming up on a lot of my my social media stuff, and also because I've been trying to get an old laptop of mine to work, is all the stuff from a little bit before this time last year when we were doing our big live NBA draft party at Victory Brewing, which was a hell of a time and one of the biggest events that we had done to that point, kind of launched us into taking our live show on this podcast, especially to a whole other level. So it was cool to look back on that, and you were a great part of that.
Yeah, that was a really cool event, really fun night. Sixers ended up with Matisse Thybul, who we all know now is a solid NBA player, so it's really cool. I've been doing good. How have you been doing?
Yeah, man, we're taking it one day at a time. You know, COVID has hit everybody pretty hard. It definitely put a big damper on what we do, since we're used to going out to the breweries and being on location. So we've been bottled up in more ways than one, so to speak. But other than that, can't complain. You know, we've had our discussions on whether basketball should return or not, and that's a whole conversation in itself. But at this point, it appears that they are, so we're moving forward as is. So, you know, we wanted to first kind of talk about, you know, the Sixers just getting to the bubble in itself. One of the biggest things we saw this week was Joel Embiid showing up in his hazmat suit that just didn't quite fit, giving off some serious Breaking Bad vibes. And, Steve, you made a great point here on our rundown about the same kind of people that were like criticizing him for wearing that and thinking that like it was over the top are the same kind of people that complain about how he doesn't take care of himself and how he's injury prone. And like, it's super hypocritical. The fact that everyone wants him to take care of himself, wants him to take care of his body. He's taking these, sure, maybe you could consider them over the top precautions, but at the same time, every single day we're finding out that more players are being diagnosed with COVID-19. So this is what you should want. You should want him to take it seriously. You should want him to do everything in his power to not, you know, get that positive diagnosis. Hare, what were your thoughts when you first saw the pictures and the video of Embiid showing up and getting into that hazmat suit as he arrived in Orlando?
I loved it. I thought it was a riot. But at the same time, I think he was being somewhat serious in terms of just taking precautions as he should when it comes to COVID. And I think it's kind of a play on both sides where it's Joel just being Joel, you know, the funny, lovable guy that we've seen on social media. And it's also him taking proper precaution. I think the timing of it was perfect. And I'm sure Joel thought of this after Kendrick Perkins basically tore him up on live TV about calling him soft when it came to him being concerned about COVID, which is obviously a load of bull. But I loved it. I hope we have fun, Joel, when it comes to these playoffs and regular season games. So ultimately, I really enjoyed it, even if it was a bit small considering he's a 7-footer.
Yeah, a point you made that is, I mean, everyone talks about it a lot, but he never ceases to amaze me. The thought he puts into these kinds of things, of these spectacles, so to speak, his social media, like, he's so smart, he's so witty, he's so ahead of the curve that you're right. Like, there's no way that this wasn't something that he dwelled on, that it wasn't something that was definitely meant to take a shot at people like Kendrick Perkins, who can eat a dick. Second time I've had to use that on this show already. But
yep, and I will, you know, I will agree that Kendrick Perkins should eat a dick. I do kind of have to admit that with Joel Embiid, we all kind of know, and he's even said himself, he doesn't really go out. He stays home, plays video games. In other words, he doesn't like to get himself into trouble. So I think he kind of has this ability to be able to hide his insecurity and maybe, you know, being scared of COVID, you know, by turning this into a funny bit. So I think there is that. And I just love it, man. I'm always here for Joel Embiid, just, you know, being the fun guy. With him coming, you know, to the airport in that suit, what it kind of reminded me of, since this is in a normal year around the time when NFL teams start to report to training camp, it kind of reminded me of when players would just show up, whether it's in, like, an obnoxious car or when they show the players coming into the training facility. There's always, like, a couple guys with big screen TVs and video games, or I think it was Antonio Brown once arrived in a helicopter. So it kind of adds to the excitement of just the league coming back.
Yeah, guys show up in, like, exotic cars, yeah. Classic cars. Like, didn't someone show up in, like, a tank or something?
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know. I think Jalen Ramsey did something really well when he was trying to get paid. I forget.
Exactly, and obviously can't really do a lot of that stuff right now.
Right.
So him just showing up in a hazmat suit.
It's super on brand. So yeah. It was definitely appreciated.
Probably got to be the biggest hazmat suit ever made, too.
Well, it definitely wasn't big enough, though.
Yeah.
So to stay on Embiid.
It was like halfway up his calf.
To stay on Embiid for a little bit. So there was another picture that came on social media, which generally was used regarding the national media having to beat the dead horse of, you know, who the Sixers should lean on, Embiid or Simmons, breaking them up. I'm not having that conversation. That's not the point. But we both noticed that in the one picture that Ben Simmons actually looked taller than Joel Embiid. Are we sure that Ben Simmons is actually done growing? And is there any possibility that at this point he is actually taller than Joel Embiid? Did you happen to see that picture, Hare?
I did not, but it's something that I would be surprised about, not due to the fact about Ben growing, but just the fact that Joel is this massive human being, and if he really is bigger than Joel, then that's really scary for other NBA players.
That was exactly my thought, yeah. I know there was the whole thing within the last year or so where the NBA, like, made all players actually measure themselves. I think it was, like, with shoes, but they had to list the actual height. There's no longer, like, a listed height. And I think they said Joel actually only checked in at, like, 6'11 or 7 foot when he had been billed as 7'2 the entire time.
Yeah.
And I think Ben was, like, billed as 6'10 and was measured at 6'10, if not 6'11. So it's not crazy to think that there was really only about an inch there as of the last time we ever heard those numbers. So I'd be curious to see if that was reported on again, if there's been any change either way.
And let's just hope it is Ben growing and getting taller and not Embiid shrinking, because that would suck.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I don't think that's the case.
Because guys with bad backs could shrink a little bit. But
sure. In a few years, maybe.
But, yeah.
To transition a little bit into Ben Simmons, and before we get into the actual serious conversation on Ben Simmons, as we're kind of talking about players showing up in social media and whatnot, there was the Ben Simmons fishing photo. And jokes were being made that he really didn't even catch it and he missed throwing it back, which just further indicates that he doesn't have any accuracy in trying to hit a shot. I know Ben Simmons is a big video game guy. Obviously, we know that he plays basketball, and beyond that, I don't really know what else he likes. Fishing is not my thing. I don't know where either of you guys sit on fishing, but it's not for me. And I'm kind of surprised to see that that's something that Ben Simmons was interested in. Do you take Ben for a fisher?
I mean, I like fishing a lot. I was actually just fishing yesterday.
Okay.
So I thought it was really cool to see Ben and Kylo Quinn. I think they're rocking Bass Pro Shop hats, which is pretty dope. But ultimately, I think it's a cool thing that he's into. I love doing it. And, hey, that's just another way that the team can bond. So true. Team chemistry is really important.
I'm glad you noticed the hat. I know you're always a fit guy. So
now, I'm not a fishing guy at all. I've gone fishing a couple of times. It was not my thing. Kind of boring. I don't even really like boats, to be honest with you. But come on, Ben Simmons is from Australia. That motherfucker fishes great white sharks and other crazy shit in that Australian ocean. So you know what? A stupid little, you know, fish or bass, whatever it was, it's just beneath him. It's probably new to him. He's used to hunting bigger and better things, you know, whether it's a great white shark or an NBA championship. So all these, you know, pundits.
Okay, so we've got Ben Simmons, shark killer. We've got Joel Embiid, lion wrestler.
Damn right.
I mean, Who says that they're not a match made in heaven, right? Mm. One dominates the land, that's one dominates true. The sea.
Yeah.
You got to cover all planes, right? But no, seriously. So moving on to the real talk about Ben Simmons was the fact that Brett Brown came out and said that he has been exclusively playing Ben at the four since they returned. Ben Simmons was quoted as, "I think I'm the type of player you can really put me in multiple positions and spots to help the team. I feel like I have a very high IQ on the court and see things a lot differently. I'm able to pass the ball very well, so that's always a threat. I love playing in that pick and roll situation. It just gives us so many different options. It's tough to guard." So it's, you know, everyone has been coming out and saying that Ben has embraced it, that he has been excelling in that role. We know that he was becoming a great screener throughout this season and was kind of finding his way in a little bit of an off-the-ball role, but by no means to the extent that it sounds like people are singing his praises for in Florida. Hare, you know, what have you heard? What are your thoughts? Is this something that you actually buy into, or does this seem like the classic case of stuff that we hear from Brett Brown, you know, that's happening behind closed doors, but then doesn't actually end up translating to on the court, especially when it counts?
I love this. I'm buying all the stock that is Ben Simmons becoming more of a power forward than a point guard for a few reasons. Ultimately, we have heard Brett Brown say some stuff, whether it be in media availability or what have you, where he would be like, "Oh, yeah, we're going to try doing this with so-and-so," and it doesn't really happen, or it doesn't really happen to the extent that we expect it. But this is something that I think the Sixers will pursue, because ultimately I think Shake Milton is the real deal. I do think that he's a long-term piece that fits very well next to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So I really hope that they do pursue this. I really like Ben playing off the ball more. One of his best games this year that I'm sure you guys will remember was against Brooklyn on the road, where Ben was primarily playing as a four or even a five. And they had, I believe, Howell Neto just dishing in the rock, have him rolling to the rim. And he tied his career high in points per game. So him playing off the ball is an area I definitely hope he continues to develop in. Ultimately, when it comes to Ben playing the four more, there are concerns that I have with it, mainly just in terms of the roster around him, which has been a major question mark the entire year. I still don't like Tobias Harris being used as a three. I think he's better off as a four. So ultimately, I think that's always going to be just something that you have. But I do like the idea of having Shake Milton play on and off the ball, kind of what Markelle Fultz was supposed to do. Sorry to bring up his name. But ultimately, I do like that move. I hope they really do pursue it.
Yeah, the Tobias thing is one of the actual detriments that I completely agree with you with, that is unfortunate of this, is that it doesn't solve the problem of trying to get Tobias back to the four. But I do think that he has performed admirably as the three, better than I thought he would this year, to all of his credit, but he is a much better four. I think the fact that, you know, maybe Ben can be a little bit versatile, and obviously on the defensive end, I don't think it's really as important to who's the three and who's the four there. So I think, you know, we're talking about Ben more so as the four strictly on offense, and then you can figure out the defense. So that's kind of okay. I just, Ben at the four, if he's not really, you know, expanding his range at all, doesn't really seem to me like it solves much of the problem of him and Embiid taking up the same kind of space. And that's the only thing that that worries me about buying into this and thinking that it's that great, is that, well, yeah, I mean, what's the difference in saying he's playing the four versus when you were saying he was the point guard, but you were putting him in the dunker spot? Isn't that really the same concept of him just being the four? So, I mean, we saw problems with that. Hopefully, maybe they're figuring that out, but to kind of transition it on to Shake Milton, because I think that's another great point. And Hare, you and I can both speak to having seen him as a blue coat as well in our time down in Delaware, that, you know, Shake has a really great skill set. And yes, unfortunate enough to bring up his name, but is kind of like a, you know, a lesser Markelle Fultz, at least what was expected of Markelle Fultz, but still looks like he's becoming a very fine NBA caliber player. And to your point of him, especially in the long term, even if we don't really want to put too much stock in the short sample size of this season, he has to play into their long term future because of the of his contract, more than anything, because of the fact that he signed that 4-year, basically, you know, vet minimum deal that Elton Brand got him to. If you can just make him a piece, then that contract is an absolute steal. And even just what you've gotten from him now makes that contract so, so valuable right now. So you have to give them a little bit of credit for identifying that. But we heard this week that Shake has been running the point, that he's been out there with the starting five. And clearly that means that Al Horford will be shifting to a bench role. When you look at the five guys of Shake, Josh Richardson, Tobias, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and let's put Al Horford in there and say that's, you know, your top six rotation, how do you kind of see the minutes shaking out there? Like, who's kind of on the short end of the stick there? Is it? I guess it's got to be between Shake and Al, right? Do you think that, you know, there's a reality where Shake Milton actually plays more minutes a game than Al Horford? Or do you think that, you know, Shake starts, but you're still going to see Al Horford get more toward that, like, 30-minute, like, kind of starter-esque minute range?
Yeah, I was actually working on predicting a playoff rotation when it came to the Sixers, and that was kind of a question I found myself asking was, what kind of role are we really going to shake in? You know, we've heard him, we've heard Brett Brown say that he's primarily been used in practice as the point guard, but you guys obviously have seen him play with the Bluecoats, too. In my opinion, he's more of a two. He's closer to a two than a one right now, just based off of size and his overall playmaking game. It can come and go. But ultimately, as long as he's on the floor with Ben Simmons, I don't think that's going to be too big of an issue. It'll be interesting to see. Shake obviously does deserve playing time. He needs to be in the rotation. Ultimately, I found myself, just based on an educated guess, putting him somewhere between 25 and 30 minutes while he was starting. Because ultimately, I think there will probably be some growing pains with Shake Milton, because, as you said, the sample size is small. And ultimately, this guy's played more in the G League than he has in the NBA up to this point. But when it comes to approaching the playoffs, I'm glad that they're starting him. I'm glad that they're giving him a bigger role, because ultimately, I don't think the Sixers are going to win a title this season. But what you can do is you can get Shake Milton some more experience with four or five other main guys. You can get him some playoff experience and build on that for future seasons to come. Ultimately, I do think Al Horford will probably edge him out in minutes, unless Shake Milton continues to just light up the NBA like he has been. Because if that's the case, then you cannot not play the guy. So I am excited to see Al more in a bench role. He's definitely the best backup center the Sixers have had probably in a very long time. And I think he will be better than what he has been this season. I really think the time off will have helped him. And hopefully he can just thrive in that role.
Yeah, I have a quote here from Al Horford, and this is from The Athletic, as far as there was a lot of speculation, especially as he kind of trended downward on the season, as to where his health was. And Horford said, quote, "I probably wasn't where I wanted to be. I'm not going to make any excuses, but right now I'm in a much better place. The time off for me was beneficial." We talked a lot about how we thought that the time off was definitely more beneficial for the Sixers as a whole than probably a lot of the other teams. But to bring it back to Shake Milton a little bit, the other thing that I think is an interesting prospect for him is how well he really was playing down the stretch. And do you think that that's something that he can actually continue? And what are your thoughts on the time off for somebody like Shake, who, you know, seemed like he was on a roll, seemed like, you know, he didn't really need the time to rest necessarily, as he wasn't used that much through the regular season. The team's last nine games, he averaged 17.8 points and 4.1 assists, was shooting a little over 60% from three over that span. Obviously, that's not going to keep up, but do you expect him to kind of regress a little bit as a result of the break, or do you think that the confidence of being with the starters, the praise he's already receiving in practice and stuff, do you think that, you know, that kind of output to some degree can actually be moderately expected from him going forward if he is in the starting lineup?
When it comes to Shake, I got to be realistic about him. He was in a very good groove before ultimately the world ended. So, you know, I don't expect him to come back after these 3 or 4 months or however long it's been and do what he was doing. Like, there was a span, I think, where he hit 9 threes in a row, maybe more. And I just can't expect him to come back and do the same thing. And I also think that there are going to be growing pains, because Shake basically had the ball in his hands without Ben and even Joel. So his role is going to be a lot different now. Now he's not really the first or even second option. He's going to be playing with Josh Richardson, who is a solid offensive talent. He was playing with Spias, but he's also playing with Ben and Joel, who are the franchise cornerstones. So I do think there's going to be growing pains. I don't expect him to come back and light it up, but I do think he will be a positive on the floor. I think he said he was averaging like 17 points. I think that might creep down to more like 12 or 14 in that range. I think that's more realistic, which isn't a bad thing at all. You know, it will be interesting to see for sure. But ultimately, I do think Shake will kind of take a step back, and that's not a bad thing. Like I said, I do think he can build on that and hopefully get back into his groove. Ultimately, he won't shoot 60% from the floor or from three or whatever you said before. That's just unrealistic to expect from him. But he shot 40% or near 40% every year in college. So he's a proven shooter. I do think that he's more than capable of shooting in the high 30s or 40s.
Yeah, and to your point, Harrison, I definitely agree that we all need to kind of temper our expectations here. He's not going to be shooting 60% from three in the playoffs. That's just crazy. And let's face it, if he was putting up those numbers as a primary ball handler or scorer, it's not going to be a very long playoff run. One thing that I think does benefit is that I know, as Dan has reported, when he's going to Blue Coat games, and I'm sure you have as well, I mean, Shake at least knows the offense, right? I mean, I know down there they pretty much instill the same exact offense that Brett does with the Sixers. So hopefully there's definitely a benefit there where, hey, maybe he may have some off-night shooting the ball, and it'll definitely be up to him, you know, personally as far as his performance to have good games. But at least there's not the problem of him not knowing the offense or where people are to be or expectations as far as that goes. So hopefully we continue to see that with the restart here.
Yeah, I think yeah, Steve's speaking sure. to the alignment that the Sixers and the Blue Coach share overall in philosophy, that they try and work from the top down. So, I mean, they're not running the same offense, obviously, and you're talking about a significant difference in the people that you're playing with, which I think has been one of the best things for Shake, is that his skill set really works well with, you know, that talent around you, rather than in Delaware where you're not able to facilitate as well and maybe guys aren't finishing as well and stuff like that. But a lot of the general kind of philosophies remain the same. So I think that he does have a little bit more understanding of things, even not having been with the team too long, than maybe the average guy who comes right out of there and joins a team and doesn't really have an idea what's going on.
I do think Shake Milton will come in and do his job. Just be a playmaker next to Ben, space the floor, and I think he'll do really good at that.
So with we kind of hit on what we think will definitely be the top six guys as far as minutes go. How do you kind of look at the rest of this team? And I think the guys to really kind of pick out of that remainder of the bench players is going to be Glenn Robinson the third, Alec Burks, Furkan Korkmaz, and Mike Scott. What do you make of that rotation? Is there anybody that you like, who do you think is going to get, you know, the first real solid look as you know, maybe like a sixth or seventh man even? And Brett came out and said that it's going to be a 10-man rotation that maybe eventually tightens to nine. Who do you think is kind of the odd man out there, if not one, maybe two guys that, you know, if this team gets later into the series or even advances to the second round, you know, might be the guy that sees his minutes kind of fall out of rotation?
So like I said, I kind of did something similar to this in terms of playing or predicting the Sixers playoff rotation. And as you said, Al Horford, I think, is going to either be in the starting lineup or be a sixth man. I think that's a very safe bet to make. Ultimately, I think Alec Burks and both Glenn Robinson are going to end up playing. I would be very shocked if one of them was left out of the rotation. With Alec Burks, he can give you just that one guy on the roster that can hit a dribble pull-up, apparently. And Glenn Robinson, I think, is a lot better than what he's shown with the Sixers. His shot kind of disappeared, so hopefully that will come back. But when he's focused, he's a very capable defender. He can hit an open shot, and he brings something very valuable to the Sixers in just flashing to the rim, which doesn't happen probably as much as it should. So I think ultimately you got Al Horford, Glenn Robinson, Alec Burks. And then things kind of get interesting because then you have both Furkan Korkmaz and Matisse Thybulle who are complete polar opposite players when you break down their game. Matisse Thybulle is someone that is just going to come in and just wreak havoc defensively. But if his shot isn't falling, you're essentially playing 4-on-5 on offense because you're not going to get any off the dribble offense from him. He's not going to slash to the rim. Sometimes that can hurt them. That's why you've primarily seen Matisse only on the floor when Ben's on the floor, just a very capable playmaker. And then you have Furkan Korkmaz, who is actually a decent defender. He has really good size. He's 6'7 without basketball shoes, which is really good size for a wing. Ultimately, he has been a lot better defensively this year, but when it comes down to it in the playoffs, I think teams are really going to pick on him on defense. So on the other end, you got a lack of defense, but obviously Furkan's a very capable shooter, and the Sixers need shooting. When you have Ben and Joel Embiid, you can never have too much of that. So ultimately, I think that you might see Brett kind of side with one or the other, depending on who's playing better. If Matisse's three-pointer is falling like it was earlier this season, it's going to be hard not to play him just because he can be at least good offensively and be great defensively. So it's going to be really interesting to see which one Brett kind of gravitates towards more. Furkan has been a pro longer, even though he really hasn't played much before this season. So I think you're going to see kind of a competition 2.0, just like what you saw with John Sims and James Ennis last season.
Oh, another
I think
tournament
might be something
in the tournament.
Similar with that.
And it sucks because you mentioned, too, how a lot of these players are polar opposite of each other. Matisse, I love Matisse. He's an energy guy off the bench, great defensively. Sometimes he's a little careless with ball handling and shots not consistent. But then you have Furkan, who's not quite a defender, but he can definitely get hot and seal you some games. But I guess with all these things said, it's a better position, whether it's those guys, Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III, versus, hey, are we going to throw out Boban or Greg Monroe to spell Joel Embiid 2 minutes? So hopefully I think we're safe to say it's a bit of a better situation than last year.
Oh, yeah. It's much better when you compare both this year's team and last year's team. The depth is just so much better. This is probably the deepest Sixers team that we've definitely seen with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. The wing rotation is just loaded. And unfortunately, that means even if Zaire Smith was healthy, he probably wouldn't be playing at all. But in terms of leaving an odd man out, I think it's got to be Mike Scott, who has just been, for the majority of the season, just a no-show. His three-point percentage has dipped down to, I believe, 35% on the year. He's not great defensively. So ultimately, I'm not entirely sure if Mike Scott is in the playoff rotation all said and done.
Yeah, I definitely had a Freudian slip when I even asked this question, leaving Matisse's name out, because I've talked about him a few times leading up to this, and I just don't believe that you can have him really on the floor in a playoff game unless you are trying to protect a decent lead, just because I don't trust him on the offensive end of the court in the playoffs with the defenses they're going to see. I've been worried about him for months now on that side of the court, and I just don't know that you can really play him. Mike Scott, I'm with you that he would be the easiest pick as the odd man out, but I know Brett has talked about it, and we've seen it proven as well that when it comes to the playoffs, it does seem like Brett really values experience and veterans a little bit more than necessarily what the numbers say, and that's basically the only thing Mike Scott's going to be able to bring at this point is the fact that he is the veteran. He has shown up in clutch moments at times, and I think I saw that he has, like, I want to say 48 career playoff games. When you look at the rest of this roster, there's really nobody besides Al Horford who has that kind of playoff resume at this point. So they are definitely the two playoff vets. I really do believe that Furkan Korkmaz can play in the playoffs. And I know it's not going to be a surprise to either of you two knowing me, but I say that without any bias and not as a bit whatsoever, that he will definitely get picked on. But Harrison, I was happy to hear you say that he is at least a decent defender, because I think that he is definitely far from where he was as the complete liability. I don't think he's anywhere near the liability J.J. Redick was in his time here, who still saw plenty of minutes of play, and I don't want him to play as many minutes as JJ did. But, you know, like, JJ got picked on to an absolutely, you know, reprehensible degree, and they could not overcome it. I don't think that Furkan Korkmaz is that, and they're going to need his shooting. I just don't know. From what I've seen of both Burks and Glenn Robinson III here, I definitely think they need to be given a shot. But unless one of them makes a pretty significant leap back to, you know, their Golden State, you know, usage, and maybe not the usage, but their efficiency.
Form.
And form as well, then I definitely think you're going to need Korkmaz, as streaky as he is. And apparently I got this from Tom West, also of Liberty Ballers, that Brett told Korkmaz that his role won't be changing, that he needs to just keep doing what he's doing, and that he's an important piece of the team. And at this point, I mean, Korkmaz is now in basically, I think, is this his third full year playing with the Sixers?
I think so, yeah.
So, I mean, he is actually one of the more Sixers veteran guys that there are. So he should have a good idea of at least what's being asked of him, where he needs to be and things like that, albeit not the greatest defensive skill set and, as we know, a streaky shooter. But I really think people are going to be surprised how much of Furkan they see. Some people may be happy with that. Some people may not. That definitely remains to be seen. But I think when a lot of people talk about these rotations, I think they're going to end up leaving Furkan out more than he's actually going. I think he's going to play more than people think, and that people who do these rotational exercises and whatnot are definitely going to use him as an odd man out, and I don't think that that may necessarily be the case. I think Mike Scott, to your point, is probably the easiest one, and then I would be willing to put money on Furkan Korkmaz playing more minutes total in these playoffs than Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah, and I pretty much agree with you guys where we're at with the rotation, but I do have this feeling that, and then I know it's kind of unfair to judge how players form before the break, because Mike Scott was having a really, really bad year. And then when we got Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III, we were excited, for the most part, because we gave up essentially nothing for them. I know a lot of people are high on Alec Burks, but honestly, like, Alec Burks just didn't show me anything. And Glenn Robinson had one good game. If they, show up with the same kind of form and play, I could see Mike Scott just taking one of their, spots, if not both, because while Mike Scott, again, didn't have any better of a year, he has the playoff experience. This is his second full year with the Sixers. I mean, Brett Brown might, feel
first he's... First full year.
Okay, yeah, because we trade for him last year. So I think Brett Brown just might be more comfortable with a guy who's been on the team for more than an entire year rather than... I mean, basically, they've only been on the team for a couple weeks before the break. So that wouldn't surprise me if that sees maybe Mike Scott just seals one of their spots as a dark horse, per se.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. As you guys said, we've seen Brett really opt for veterans in playoff situations. Even last year in the Toronto series, he kind of pump faked everyone by saying, yes, Zaire will be in the rotation. And then he wasn't. So... It'll be interesting to see if Mike Scott does warm his way into a playoff spot. I would be surprised, just because if Ben's going to be playing the four more, I'm sure that the other person playing the four is probably going to be Tobias Harris. If not even one of the wings, and like Glenn Robinson at the four, I think is very interesting in a small ball lineup. I just think there's better options than Mike Scott with this team when it comes to him getting playoff minutes.
My only fear, too, is that, to kind of go back to Al Horford a little bit, what if this emphasis with Ben playing a four more is to divert attention away from Al Horford, and that, maybe Brett Brown's just not going to give him a ton of minutes. Maybe there's still a nagging injury, because if there's something wrong with Horford, then I think Ben playing a four is more of a necessity than a luxury. And then, you can have some sort of rotation where it's like Ben, Toby, Glenn Robinson III, and then, Mike Scott. So, I mean, I hope that's the case. But, and like we said, the break benefits someone like Al Horford. But I just hopefully, that's not the case.
I mean, I don't really want to try to speculate on a Horford injury when there's no reports of it and he's come out and saying that the rest helped him. But I think the more interesting thing than that was we also saw – you know, in the second half of the year, a very small sample size of Ben Simmons as a small ball five, which is something people have been clamoring for. It's not something you can do a lot, but I think the way it looks like they're setting up, you're probably not really ever going to see a lineup on the floor that doesn't have at least one of Joel Embiid and now Horford, and that's fine. But I wouldn't be entirely mad if the only time that they're both not on, that Ben Simmons is your center. Not Mike Scott, not Kyle O'Quinn, but Ben Simmons. That's the only real thing that I think I could be okay with if you're going to tell me that both Embiid and Horford are not on the floor at the same time. But that has to be in pretty small stints and definitely has to depend on the matchup as well, I think.
Dude, I completely forgot Kyle O'Quinn was on the team until I saw Matisse's video.
He's never going to see the floor.
Wait, who is that guy? Oh, yeah,
he's
shit.
He's never going to see the floor.
No, no.
Okay, so I have a couple, you know, not necessarily rotational playoff conversation type things, but a couple things around the league that I definitely want to talk about. So the first thing is the idea of, you know, what they're trying to do to support the Black Lives Matter movement in regards to them playing these games. And right now, the only thing we've really heard much of is the names on the back of the jerseys. And I want to see what you guys think about this, because there's quotes from Mike Scott in The Athletic that I found very interesting. He said, quote, "I don't know. I don't know how. They gave us some names and phrases to put on the back of jerseys. That was terrible. It was a bad list, bad choice. They didn't give players a chance to voice their opinion. They just gave us a list to pick from. So that was bad. That's terrible." He later said, quote, "I don't know how you could use your platform. I don't know. Of course, vote, see what laws we could change. But I'm all about doing instead of just saying or hosting or putting something on the back of your jersey. I don't think that's going to stop anything." And Josh Richardson was also quoted saying, "I think it's tough to try to limit what people are feeling and how people can speak out to just a list of like 15 to 20 sayings." So the only things I've heard regarding the Sixers is that Embiid is not going to put anything on the back. It's just going to be his name. And I heard that Matisse is going to have the word vote. So, Harrison, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on the idea of them being able to put messages on the back of their jerseys, the idea that the NBA has provided them a predetermined list they have to pick from? And I guess, you know, what are your thoughts on, is that enough, or do you have any other, you know, ideas or suggestions on maybe what they could do that might be viewed in a more positive light than this?
You know, it's hard to say, because I see both sides of it. I do think that the NBA is trying to do a good thing when it comes to letting players put customized things on the back of their jerseys. Because there's a lot of important stuff going on in the world right now, the biggest one probably being Black Lives Matter. And I do feel like it's the right thing to do, to give players that option. But I do kind of agree with what Josh Richardson said, in the fact that, you know, you have all these pre-approved sayings, but a lot of them really don't feel customized. They just kind of feel very vague and even like PR-ish. And by that, I mean like just very general. And ultimately, when it comes to talking about these important issues, you can't have just general sayings. It doesn't feel, you know, honest at all. So I really do understand what the players are saying in that. I wish that there were more customized ones. And then I know they're also putting Black Lives Matter on the court, which is obviously a very cool and important thing. I do like that a lot. But I do agree, you know, the NBA is filled with just a ton of black athletes. It's mostly an African-American league. So you really have to support these guys. You really have to support what's going on. I do agree with that side of things. I did see today that Jimmy Butler, another guy whose name should probably be banned from any Sixers podcast, came out and said that he's going to try and request to have nothing on the back of his jersey, which I thought was kind of an interesting move. And his reasoning for that is he just wants to be viewed like every other normal American citizen that deals with these types of things and issues that, you know, have created Black Lives Matter and such. So I do think that's interesting. But like I said, I do wish it was more customizable, because then it would feel kind of more honest and more special.
I did not hear about Jimmy Butler, and I'm going to have a very possibly unpopular opinion here.
Oh.
But that move feels entirely like the most generic Jimmy Butler move that you could make, and it feels like him basically just being like, oh, yeah, I'm just another guy, when really in his head he's not, but he's always trying to play that fucking card, and it drives me crazy. And this feels like he's, you know, making this move to fit his entire brand and image, but at the same time he's also completely, you know, dodging and avoiding an issue, which really pisses me off. But, I'm definitely slightly biased there. I want to also applaud the Philadelphia Union, who in their first game back from quarantine, to the point of the NBA and them trying to control this, it did not seem like anybody had any idea that this was happening. There were no reports of it. The announcers who were covering the game like had to look up what it was because they weren't entirely sure and didn't want to be wrong. But all the Philadelphia Union players, instead of their names, they had names of African Americans who had been, you know, wrongly slain down by police officers in America. And one, the message is strong enough in itself, but my real point in tying it to this was that one, I seriously don't think that they had any conversation with MLS about doing it. I don't think that they cared. I think they said, this is what we're going to do. And number one, the team allowed them to do it and got it done, which I applaud them. And I've heard nothing since that game, which was over a week ago, I think, about any repercussions or issues with that. So good for them. Like, that's exactly how it should be. There shouldn't need to be a list. There shouldn't need to be a conversation. It should be, you know, you're doing this for the good of the league. You're doing this to make mostly, you know, old rich white men more money. And what you choose to do as a message, because you are willing to come make this sacrifice and live in a bubble and risk your health and everything to play a sport, then you should be able to do whatever you deem necessary, as long as, like, you're not going out and, like, stabbing another player or, like, you know, physically hurting somebody. Like, and obviously nothing that is, like, a slur toward anybody else or any kind of thing like that.
I think what it ultimately is, you know, one of the points of this movement is to give everyone, not just professional athletes, a voice to speak up. And by saying, here's a pre-approved list of what you can or cannot say, it still feels like you're being censored to a degree. I can understand maybe not allowing players to have all caps, or all cops are bastards, or fuck the police, or something like that on their jerseys. Like, you know, that I can see. But I think if I'm not mistaken, I think LeBron's even passing on putting anything on the jersey.
It's just his last name. It's just James.
Yeah. So to me, that with what how a lot of players respond tells me that isn't a very inclusive or impressive list, and just doesn't give the players, you know, the ability to be more, you know, custom or, you know, vocal in their own
way. LeBron surprised me, too. I really thought he would, and I don't know if he has something else planned. I don't necessarily want to slam him just yet, but for all the slack that we saw, and we talked about this before when we did our series on The Last Dance, for all the slack that Jordan got regarding that North Carolina, politician thing where he wouldn't voice his support for the Democratic candidate,
yeah,
or whatever, and said, you know, Republicans buy shoes too. You know, I'm not seeing that same kind of heat just yet for LeBron over this, and this seems like a much bigger deal to me than that, right? Where that was simply, you know, one, like, a, you know, a, some kind of political vote in North Carolina at the time, and this is a national stage voicing, backing a national protest at this point, and you're the face of the league. You're, you know, considered one of the all-time greats, and you're just leaving your name on there. It feels a little weird to me, man. I don't know. I want to be split down the middle, and I'd like to think somebody like LeBron, who has used his platform for plenty of good, so it's not like he's known to be dodging these things, so I don't want to make that assumption. I hope he has something figured out, you know, I guess outside of this, which if he does, then good. Because again, the consensus seems to be that most people don't think that this is that great of an idea or nearly enough anyway. So if that's the stance he's taking and he's got something else in the bag, great. And, you know, I'm hoping to believe that's the case for him, but I was a little weary to see that he was not partaking in this part, but I'm going to try and give him the benefit of the doubt, even though I can be known to be a bit of a LeBron hater.
Yeah, when you touch on these issues, like, I think a lot of athletes, and especially NBA players, given with the list that they've received, just feel like it's very robotic and very PR-ish in general, like I said. And that's probably how LeBron feels. You know, these are real things happening to real individual people who are their own people. They're all unique. They all have dreams, families, and such. And when it comes to something like this, you want to handle it the right way. You want to handle it respectfully. And ultimately, just like painting on a custom saying onto your jersey doesn't do the justice for those people that have, unfortunately, been wrongfully slain by police. So ultimately, LeBron does seem to do the right thing in a lot of situations. He's been very good off the court.
Agreed.
So it will be interesting to see what he does. And something that really surprised me is when the first batch of players came out who are actually putting custom sayings on their jerseys. It was like a list of like 7 or 10 players, including Matisse. I think only one of them had Black Lives Matter. And I think that says something a lot about how the players view the list given to them, about it just being very robotic, very vague. I think only one player had it thus far. So I think that speaks volumes, because I definitely expected to see it a lot more being in the NBA, which is a primarily African-American league.
Yeah, my initial thought to that is maybe they just didn't choose that phrase specifically because they know it's going to be on the court. So maybe they want to use it for another one. But that is interesting. You would think that that would have been something we would have seen a lot more of. Not to not to derail the conversation from that, but the last two things I had, you know, aren't nearly as serious. But, you know, I wanted to talk about that first because I figured we would spend a little more time on it because it's important. These not so much. Regarding just the bubble in general, we've seen a decent amount of posts regarding the food there and the situation. The best glimpse we've got is definitely Matisse's Instagram videos, which are unreal. He has two kind of little mini docs that are a few minutes apiece on life inside the bubble. So if you haven't seen them yet, I highly recommend checking them out. They're very well produced. Matisse has quite a gift for photography, video, and video editing, which is crazy considering he's also a very skilled basketball player. But, you know, we saw in his videos, we saw glimpses of the food. We saw Joel Embiid post a picture of, it looked like some pasta, some chicken. And then he took the picture of himself back from Cameroon. At like, you know, probably well under 200 pounds at that point. And he's like, this is what I'm going to look like after I've eaten here. We've seen a couple other players posting pictures of the food. Harrison, where do you kind of stand on the overall, not even necessarily just the players? I mean, they're there. I don't really care if they want to have fun with it or rip it. But, you know, kind of the backlash on social media, it reminds me a lot, if either of you are familiar with, like, Not nearly to the same degree, but a fire fest when, you know, that infamous picture of like the piece of bread with a tomato on it or whatever that went around. This obviously is not nearly the dire situation that is, but it sure seems like, you know, there's a little bit of dramatizing of what it's like down there. You know, do you guys just find it funny? Do you have any issues with it? Because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, there are people that have to, you know, are working down there making that food that are pretty much just as much at risk as anybody else that are not going to be nearly as celebrated as the players down there making the sacrifice and whatnot. So, you know, the guys that have fun with it, like Embiid, I think I don't mind, but the ones that are kind of sitting there just kind of shitting on the whole idea of it, I feel a little bit bad for, especially for the workers who are there probably doing the best with what they can. And I'm sure getting stuff in there probably isn't easy as well, because like everyone knows, I mean, it's a fucking bubble. And I'm sure they kind of have to work with what they have to some degree as well.
Imagine being the 18-year-old kid who's like, you know, a cook in that kitchen, just preparing whatever's thrown at him, only to go home after working a 12-hour day, like, oh, some asshole from the NBA ripped all my grilled chicken again. Like, what the hell?
And they're probably one of those kids that's working down there for college credit. They're not even getting a paycheck, part of that like, bullshit Disney college program or whatever it is. Yeah. I forget.
I will say though, like I gotta be honest, like it's easy to poke fun or criticize certain things here and there, but if there's one place on earth that has the ability, the resources to pull together out of their ass something unprecedented, a plan to, you know, have this kind of organization, it's Disney. I mean, it's just not only the hotels and the accommodations that they have, but I even saw when they get tested, they use like those the magic bands things, and they just have a way of tracking things. It's like it's just really incredible when you think about the short time. I know it feels like we've been in quarantine forever, but this is not a long time to prepare and come up with these things. And just with anything else in life, there's going to be delays. There's going to be screw ups. Things are going to change on a daily basis. And it's just going to be weird for the players because it's going to kind of feel like being away at summer camp all summer, not seeing your friends or family really or anything like that. So it's tough on the players as well as anyone else involved. But I think, you know, given the circumstances, they seem to have it, you know, pretty good down there for the most part. But you know what? If they want to poke fun at it because that's how they want to kill time, that's also fine with me.
So when it came to the players choosing or just posting, I've seen good food and I've seen bad food. And I'm actually really surprised at the quality of food down there. When I think of Disney, I think of like something magical, like high quality food. Like I'm sure you guys have been to like Disney World or Orlando and you've had the food there and it's really good food. So I was really shocked to see like this middle school cafeteria looking food with some of these profile pictures. And like you said, I get that they had limited time to prepare this and to get everything organized and they might have overlooked it a bit. I saw a report somewhere, I totally forget who tweeted it or wrote it, about them bringing in some world-class chefs to improve the standards that is that. So hopefully they do that. And I was just ultimately really shocked by the quality of food down there. And it's been really funny, like what recently happened with process legend Rashawn Holmes, who apparently ordered DoorDash or some service. And he apparently crossed the street of wherever the Sacramento Kings are staying, and now he's in quarantine.
Yep.
So it's been kind of funny watching players like Kelly Oubre tweeted out a way to sneak food in, and Rashawn did it, and ultimately got suspended.
Yeah, Oubre'd, so, man.
Hopefully. Yeah, it was really funny, and then he tweeted out, "Never mind." After Rashawn got suspended,
so. and keeping with the Disney theme here, do you think this is going to be like if you guys are familiar with the movie Heavyweights? The Judd Apatow's first movie, might I add, where they're going to have these other kids from another camp. You know, they're just going to hide all this food somewhere so the players can sneak out in the middle of the night to grab it, like, you know, put, like, you know, Twizzlers and salamis and bedposts and shit like that. Or
they're definitely going to try and pull. You know, it's one of those things, as somebody, I shamelessly admit that I had to go to band camp, you know, several times. At any kind of camp situation like this, I mean, you guys have probably gone to some sort of camp. I know, Steve, you were like a summer rec counselor.
Yeah.
I don't know about camps going through whatever, but like, you know, it's one of those things where no matter how strict it is, you know, like when I was in Boy Scouts, it was super strict. When I was at band camp, they tried to say it was strict, but, you know, we knew they had no control over what we did and we were a bunch of animals. But regardless of how strict or loose the restrictions are whenever you go to something like that, you're always going to push the boundaries until you find out what they really are. Because there's always a difference between what the stated rules are and what the actual rules are. So, like, even at this point, you know, these are all supposed to be grown adults, grown men who could take care of themselves. I mean, unfortunately, that's just not really the situation. So you had to know going in that they were going to stretch the limits until they found out what the actual consequences were. And we saw that with Rashawn Holmes now having to quarantine alone for 10 days, release a statement, and look like an absolute moron, basically getting punked by Kelly Oubre.
And we almost saw that with Matisse in the video. I mean, he was about to fly a drone out of his hotel window. And, you know, maybe he was looking for getting an aerial view of some snacks or something. And then, you know, but then he probably would have had a fine from the FAA or whoever else. So.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah,
so
I'm glad you brought up flying out the window, because speaking of going out the window, the last thing I wanted to talk about, and it was I wanted to talk about this anyway, just basically from how social media has been. But then an article came out in The Athletic that perfectly matched this, is the Boban experience and seeing him down in Disney, and especially seeing the pain it's causing our guy Tobias Harris. And if you're a fan of Boban, if you're a fan of a lot of guys in the NBA, if you check out The Athletic, if you're not a subscriber, you know, we talk about it a lot on here, so obviously we recommend it. But there was an entire article, I think they spoke to like 30 or so different people about like 9 different, you know, characteristics about Boban, and basically they call him, you know, the best teammate in the NBA. It's all praising, you know, kind of this magical story of Boban. We know him and Tobias Harris are best friends. When they start listing the players that they spoke to, the first one is Tobias Harris, and every other person they put, you know, they have Matt Bonner, Spurs teammate, T.J. McConnell, Sixers teammate. Tobias Harris, it doesn't say Clippers and Sixers teammate or Detroit teammate. It says best friend, 2015 to present. So
damn right.
It's a very real thing. They talk about his personality. The quote from T.J. McConnell, again, former Sixer, I really enjoyed was, I probably sound like a broken record, but I don't think I've ever seen that guy have a bad day. They talked about like his body. If you've ever seen him, like even though he's like 7'3", 7'4", like he's actually ripped as hell. They asked Mike Scott about this. He said, I'm pretty sure his body fat's like 5-6%. He's cut. He works out. He's not like a fat 300 pounds. He's muscle. As a fat 300 pounds, I completely understand what he's saying. Former Sixer Ish Smith. This
was my favorite. I know where you're going with
this. Okay, because this one, I was like,
oh, man.
If this gets on Twitter, well, no, they're going to like this one. He said, I don't hear anyone talking about how great of a teammate Kawhi Leonard is. They just say he can play. I don't want to disrespect Boban in any manner about his game. He can play. He can play with the best of them. So, shots at Kawhi Leonard in praise of Boban Marjanovic. That's about as Ish Smith as it gets.
Process legend, Ish Smith.
That one, good luck, buddy. I hope he doesn't run into Kawhi anytime soon, man. I don't know if either of you knew this, but Boban hates flying. Tobias Harris said he's the worst on the team plane. It's freaking ridiculous. Ish Smith said he'd be tripping on the plane. Tobias then said, there's been times where I felt like I was the parent in letting him know the plane is going to be okay. I remember one time I really did tell him, if it's going to crash, it's going to crash. And he almost really started to cry. And I was like, oh man, he really does not like planes. And then the last one was, there will be times where the turbulence comes and he'll go over and tap me and I'll act like I'm sleeping. Like, I do not feel you tapping me right now. Other times I'll be like, it's all good. And he'll whisper, no, it's not good. It's not good. And then I'll get up and walk to the front and the cockpit is closed, but I'll go back like I talked to the pilot and say, he said it's all good and he would believe me.
My favorite thing from this article, I can sort of relate to it, is they were talking about how he really loves ginger ale, and I forget who introduced him to it, but I can relate.
It was Kyle Anderson.
Okay, Kyle Anderson. And I can kind of relate to that with, you know, you becoming friends with someone who is foreign and didn't grow up in America, and you then introduce them to something that is just so ordinary and typical to you. You're like, wait, you don't have ginger ale over there?
Or what about like, when we introduced Paulo to snow?
Yeah, or cheesesteaks, you know? So I can relate to that experience. Like, it's exciting when you get to introduce, you know, that kind of thing to someone.
Another T.J. McConnell quote about how tall Boban actually is. He said, I vividly remember a stranger going up to him and being like, how tall are you? And he said, I'm only 6'5". And then the last thing I took from this was, Boban was killed by John Wick, and the first quote is Mike Scott, and he said, he got his ass whooped in John Wick 3, first person to die. So back to the whole thing, tying this together about the window, did you see the video of Tobias Harris and Boban and Tobias? They're filming each other. Boban's out on the sidewalk. Tobias is in his window. Tobias is like, nah, man, get out of here. You got new friends. He's like, get out of here. And Boban's trying to talk to him. Man, like, I know that we talked about Horford and Embiid and you know, Harrison mentioned the depth on this team, and this team is very deep. It's definitely the deepest team we've had. I don't expect to have nearly the same nightmares that, unfortunately, you know, we've talked about Markelle Fultz and Jimmy Butler being guys that should never be mentioned on Sixers podcast. Obviously, we don't really ever want to have to talk about Greg Monroe and Amir Johnson again, but, you know, when we talk about locker room guys, and especially during quarantine, there's been a lot of reports and quotes from a lot of the players giving Tobias Harris a lot of credit for, you know, being a leader and kind of keeping everybody connected and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, there is a lot of value to that. And we've tried to give him credit for that while a lot of people have hated on him, obviously because of the contract and whatnot, that, you know, it was a lot of fun having a guy like Boban here. And I love those stories of guys that you can root for even when they're not here anymore. And mm-hmm. I was wondering if you guys can think of, and even if it's not the NBA, even if you have to go to another sport, but like if you can really think of guys, you know, specifically from like our kind of lifetimes too and our generations that, you know, kind of regardless of team affiliation, regardless of rivalries, like guys that just throughout the league were pretty much universally cheered for and loved by not only the players who knew them, but also by the fans that just genuinely found them to be, you know, a good person, to be, you know, somebody that they admire, to be somebody that they could find themselves rooting for even when they weren't on their team, or even if they're on their team, even if they're not necessarily, you know, a star player, or, you know, the guy that's really bringing that much to the team. Not that Boban necessarily was that, but I was wondering if either of you guys had anybody else that came to mind, because I can't remember ever reading another article like this where you had so many guys from across the league and so many guys that hadn't even actually like really played on teams with him just showing an outpouring of like love and support for him. And like I say this completely like not kidding, even though I know it's going to sound kind of fucked up, but like you usually kind of see these things like if somebody passes away early, and like Boban's fine, like he's chilling, he's in Orlando, he's like best friends with Luka Doncic now, like he's having a good time, like, and still, like, you know, he's so revered that, you know, they wrote this article, they got all these quotes, and it's a very heartwarming and fun-filled piece. If you know, you are a subscriber, definitely. If you haven't seen that yet, check it out. But do you guys have anybody that comes to mind in sports in general?
Yeah, there's two, actually, that immediately came to mind when you brought up this question. The first being Steve Kerr, who is currently the coach of Golden State. He's someone that's always been really well-spoken, very outspoken politically. He's always talking about political issues, and he's someone that seems to be very well-respected by not just players in the league today, but back when he was playing, it seems like he was just a great teammate, and he's obviously had a lot of success on other teams.
Well, except that time Jordan punched him, but yeah.
well, yeah, I guess that
got his respect. My point.
But you know, he was a part of that Chicago Bulls team. He also won a championship with the Spurs, as well as won a championship as a coach with Golden State. Well, multiple championships, but he's someone I think is very well liked around the league. And then another person I got, again, another coach, would be Greg Popovich. You see everyone on the Spurs really just enjoying him, and all around the league. You even got LeBron, who's been head-to-head with him in the finals a few times, just constantly complimenting him, praising him, so just being a likable guy. So those are two that immediately come to mind for me.
Steve Kerr, I think, is a matter of people respecting his accolades and his acumen. I don't know if it's necessarily the personality. I love him for sure, but especially when you bring up the political stuff, I mean, I think that, you know, if you side with him, you're going to love that, but there's always going to be a lot of people that you rub the wrong way with that. So I think he's very well respected. Is he loved? I don't know. Popovich, I think, is a great answer, and also is both. He's respected because of what he does. He's arguably like the greatest NBA coach of all time, but people do genuinely love him, and he's so funny and he's so witty, and, you know, he does his whole deadpan thing, but then will, you know, break face and be this very funny, you know, heartwarming, like lovable guy. So that one I definitely see. And because you brought him up, I don't even have to look this up. I remember it because this is how like Pop is. They asked Pop about Boban, and of course his initial answer was like, he's terrible. He's a locker room cancer, he's the worst player I've ever coached, and he's trying to, you know, sell it. And then he breaks and he's like, no, like, you guys know, everybody loves him, tremendous player, tremendous worker. Like, that's that Popovich thing. Like, if you get that response from him, that means you struck a chord with him. And for him being a guy that strikes so many chords with many, like, I, you know, it speaks to both of them very well, that, you know, Boban's clearly a guy who you know, has remained in the heart of Popovich, and Popovich is a guy who remains in the hearts of pretty much everybody. So I think that's definitely a great answer.
So I have two as well, because it's really hard to find someone who has all the things that is Boban. One thing that came to mind to me, just someone who's beloved no matter who they previously played for, or someone who you really rooted for me is Chris Long when he was in the Eagles. You know, he's someone that I have this weird tendency when a player gets traded or leaves a team, like a lot of times I'll just, you know, unfollow them on Instagram or Twitter, but I still follow Chris Long. He's someone who politically has always been outspoken, and if I'm not mistaken, his last year here, pretty sure every paycheck he received, he donated to a different charity. That's correct. I mean, yeah, he's just like a real, like, you know, talented player and really awesome guy. And then as far as personality and just like the goofiness, when I think of Boban, just reading some of these funny things, I kind of, there's a little bit shades of a Dario here for me. Now Dario probably not as, I mean, this is not me being critical of him, but his English isn't as good as Boban's. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a language barrier that doesn't help him. But, you know, he's probably a little more shy or not as of a social butterfly, if you will, as Boban. But just like, you know, just being like kind of silly and goofy, but being a guy that everyone, you know, loves and rallies around. I always, when I think Dario, I always think about that one time when was it TJ giving him like a piggyback ride, you know, after a game years ago.
You saw a lot of that from Dario off the court. And I feel like you kind of heard some stuff off the court, but not as much. So I think that speaks to your point. It's like Boban, you know, like, you know, especially like seeing him in a movie like Wick 3, seeing, you know, all the social media stuff, like that's not necessarily Dario. But when you see him, I think he kind of takes that personality a step forward when he's on the court. So I definitely think that's a really great answer as well. The when you said Chris Long, the other guy that came to my mind, and very much in a similar nature as far as how his career went too, is Connor Barwin. Okay, I felt was a guy that everywhere he was, people really, really liked him. And I know even when he left here, everyone was still big fans of him. And even when he became a New York Giant, like no one really held him against him or hated him. He's played a very long career for a lot of different teams, but it seems like everywhere he's gone, both, you know, the organization, the locker room, and the fans all have liked him. I know he's done a ton of charity work and whatnot. Seems like a great guy in every community that he's in. So definitely seems like another one that rings that bell. And to some degree, I mean, I know we hadn't heard much about it until here, but, you know, like Mike Scott kind of fits that bill a little bit too.
He does, yeah.
He's a real fun guy for the locker room. He has a great personality when he decides to use it, and he kind of, you know, comes and goes with it when he does. But when he does it, you know, like we heard some of the quotes in here about Boban, and we've obviously heard him quoted on several other things, especially like, you know, last year's postseason and whatnot. I ain't no bitch. So like he gives you a lot of good stuff. Clearly for our city, he fits in very well. But, you know, you heard nothing but good things when we acquired him from the Clippers as well, as far as, you know, a depth piece, as far as a locker room guy. Stuff like that. And it seems like, you know, he's a guy that's moved around a decent amount. So he's played with a lot of people, and everybody that he's played with seems to have nothing but good things to say about him. So I think to a lesser degree, he's kind of that as well. So that's everything that I had. I don't know if you guys have anything else, but I thought that this was great. I thought we hit a lot of stuff. Harrison, we really appreciate having you on, man. I definitely want to get you on more. This has been well overdue.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to be on more. I appreciate you guys having me on. I always love talking Sixers. So thank you for the opportunity.
You have anything you want to plug?
Yeah. If you want to follow me, read my takes, read my content at Liberty Ballers, you can follow me on Twitter at Harrison_Grimm with two M's, just like the fairy tales. And yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. For Steve, I'm Dan. That's going to be it for this episode of Process Potables. Thanks, everybody, and trust the podcast.